You're just in time to have your head cut off. The horseman comes! And tonight he comes for you!
Hello and welcome back, listeners. We are so happy to have you back to the Fear Response podcast. And Jenna and I, right now, we're actually just going through the metal gates of, what is this place called?
John, I'm glad you asked. This is St. Lucius Cemetery.
Right.
For another of our special Halloween event episodes, we'll be recording from this hallowed ground of St. Lucius Cemetery.
For Halloween.
Sitting atop Grandpappy's grave.
It is nice to make a thing out of it, right? Yeah. Go visit him and we can get this podcast recorded.
Yeah, we'll leave some flowers while we're at it. Job done.
We had to pay the groundskeeper to let us in after hours. What was his name?
Bojangles? No, Joe Bangles.
Yes, it was Joe Bangles, wasn't it? I always get it mixed up because it sounds like Bojangles.
Which is silly because it's Joe Bangles.
Thanks, Joe. He's kind of lurching around back there.
Kids, no good.
It's interesting when he walks by because you can hear his keys.
Yeah, you can hear his keys and
jangling.
He has some very big skeleton keys that we can see. Not the only skeletons in this place.
Ayo, we are here to talk about a film called Sleepy Hollow.
And if you'll recall, this was like my first horror movie.
Really, it was like your first foray into the genre?
Yep. And I want to say I was maybe like 11 or 12 having a Halloween sleepover with two of my friends.
Cool.
From the swim team, remember?
Okay, I don't.
So, you don't remember that I was on the swim team?
I remember you were on the swim
team. That's what I'm saying.
Well, okay, but you set it up. You're like, I was on a sleepover with two girls from the swim team. Do you remember? It's like, I don't remember that night.
You weren't there.
I remember you were on the swim team. You used to have to get up and, and go to swim practice for like 6 a.m. every day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I am an excellent swimmer though, so I guess it paid off. But it was like, it was a very fun sleepover. It was like, we went out trick-or-treating and then had a sleepover and watched a horror movie because we were just on the cusp of still trick-or-treating.
That's pretty cool.
But also, because personally, I was not a teenage trick-or-treater. I was not like a 15, 16-year-old trick-or-treater. So we went trick-or-treating together and then stayed up and watched a horror movie. It was great. Super fun night. Three girls.
It's really cool. And I'll tell you as we go, but as I was watching this movie, I kind of hearkened back to some sleepovers too.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't even realize, but this movie had some scenes burned into my brain that were way the heck back there.
Okay, you're going to have to tell me as we go through. But yeah, it's definitely, this movie is like big time fall vibes. Big fall energy for sure.
100%.
Big spooky energy. And I, as you know, I'm not a Tim Burton kind of gal.
I'm not the biggest Tim Burton fan either. So this movie does come to us from 1999 from Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, a duo who have paired up more than once.
Oh, many, many times. So Sleepy Hollow, which again, I don't even know if we've said the name of it.
Maybe not. We're here to talk about Sleepy Hollow.
We're here to talk about Sleepy Hollow, which we always do this. We forget to say the name until like halfway through.
It's in the title, right?
That's true.
They clicked on it.
That's true. This movie is a Tim Burton classic and, you know, with him written all over it, Danny Elfman is the composer, which he also pairs up with Tim Burton a lot. But I'm not, don't like Coraline, don't like, I mean, it's fine, but like not a Nightmare Before Christmas kind of gal.
Ugh, James and the Giant Peach.
Yeah.
I agree. I think certainly, according to me, this is the best thing that Tim Burton's ever done. Might be the best thing that Johnny Depp has ever done. I mean, I know he is a prolific star.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about Johnny Depp right now.
Oh, well, clearly some problematic stuff.
I think he's a creep. I think he may have always been a creep. But he's obviously, like, an amazing actor. This movie and Pirates of the Caribbean. Oh. I'm sorry, Pirates of the Caribbean is amazing.
Masterpiece, you're right.
It is amazing.
You're right. I'm trying to think about what else he's in. I think I remember liking Blow. That was a million years ago.
He was in a lot of super interesting movies when he was young. Like he was in, he was in Nightmare on Elm Street.
I was just about to say
in
that.
In his little cute little crop top.
Yeah, he is in Nightmare on Elm Street.
And he was a real babe in that.
Yeah, he was a handsome guy.
Oh, yeah. He, right? And like kind of beautiful though. He's got kind of like elegant features.
Porcelain features.
Oh, especially in this porcelain.
Yeah. Well, and
pale as the moon.
And he played like an exactly the same looking guy in like two movies. So he was Sweeney Todd.
Okay. Love musicals, love horror. Hate Sweeney Todd.
In all forms.
I don't like the music. I'm not endeared to it. I don't like Sweeney Todd. I don't think I'm a Sondheim gal.
Yeah. You don't enjoy being Sondheimized.
I don't like being Sondheimized.
Our blood bleeds Lloyd Webber, right?
And yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a Lloyd Webber stan all the way.
Plus, whoever wrote Rock of Ages.
Whoever wrote Rock of Ages. All the musicians of the 80s.
yeah, for sure. We digress again. I really like this movie, and I'll say that before we even get going. And
yeah,
it had some very deep-seated memories for me, for sure.
And do you know what I was thinking as we were watching it? I was like, man, I wish there were more movies like this.
It's a vibe, and the vibes are impeccable.
It's such a fall vibe.
It's so cool.
It's like this movie is like the same Halloween vibes as Hocus Pocus, but with an edge.
Yeah, you're right. And it's like Gilmore Girls, but spooky.
Yeah, it's as fall as Gilmore Girls, except, okay, it's 10 times edgier than Gilmore Girls.
Well, yeah. Is it a scale of 1 to 10? Because it certainly is 10 times.
How edgy is Gilmore Girls?
Okay, Gilmore Girls, I don't think we could be discussing a property with much less edge than Gilmore Girls.
I know. It's got the soft. It's a sphere. It's got no edges at all. Okay. So if Gilmore Girls is 0.
Okay.
And
Hocus Pocus is what, 5?
Okay, wait. Yeah, so Gilmore Girls is 0, and the edgiest Halloween movie.
Halloween?
Halloween, because it's strictly Halloween movies.
Like Halloween vibes, yeah.
Okay, strictly fall. Okay, so if Halloween is 10,
yeah,
and Gilmore Girls is 0, where's Hocus Pocus?
4.
Yeah, 4.
Like maybe south of the middle.
And this is like a 7.
Yeah, easy. Halloween Town, obviously a 10.
No, but it's not 10 for edge.
So, well, yeah, we're going to start talking about this movie, but just so you know, Jenna and I quite like it. It's one of the reasons we picked it for
love
our Halloween
it.
Episodes.
And actually, just moments ago, we rewatched part of the movie just to refresh our memories, and I had to, like, stop myself. Because
from talking?
John and I are notorious in our family as movie talkers.
Yeah. We could say famous, but it's infamous.
It's not well received. Yeah.
We are notorious for it. There's no question. Yeah, we're going to talk about this movie now. It starts with a very dramatic opening with really loud kind of music and a lot of orchestra going on. All the scenes lovingly panning over this will kind of, and the will and testament, last will and testament, and then sealing it with this really blood red wax with the big seal. Like, that was a cool way to start things off, because they don't harken back to that scene at all, and it just cuts to something brand new afterward.
Yeah, they go very like classic scary colors, much like the palette of our Instagram images, red, black, and white. How do you like that in the first opening is like all the information that you're going to know for the whole mystery is unveiled if you watch really closely in those first few minutes?
Oh, like if you try to read every word?
Or, yeah, and I guess, like, in hindsight, you'll find out.
Yeah, that's interesting, and I hadn't thought about that much. It almost seems like it could be almost anything in the beginning. It's just really dramatic, like I said. It's almost like the flipping pages before a Marvel movie or something. Like, you just kind of let it wash over you as more of an effect. But that's interesting. I didn't really think about that, and then I think I remember seeing, like, it says it's a will. It says, it, like, we see a signature.
And you can see who signs it,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it might have been tough to read, I guess, because it's like quite a fancy script. One of the things about this movie, too, is just the color palette is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a cool color palette.
It is
cool.
In that
it's blue and gray. That's one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah, it's blue and gray and pale, and everything is kind of like a feast for the eyes, I find.
Yeah.
It's misty.
Yes, so much fog. Okay, yeah, so after the slow scene kind of that's introducing us to the film and the world, we cut right to Johnny Depp, who is playing Ichabod Crane. He is fishing a floater out of the river, and he's kind of saying, hey, anyone out there, come help me. And they say, Ichabod Crane, is that you? And
None other.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. And so he takes the body, or somehow the body gets to, is it the morgue? or it's the jail.
Hard to tell.
Right?
Seems like there's some professionals in there.
They're A, locking people up in a jail cell, and B,
and also that's where dealing with dead bodies.
Right? Yeah, so I suppose it's like police headquarters. Johnny Depp is an investigator, but whoever his boss is basically like, hey, you found the body. It was in the river. It's a drowning. And he's saying, no, we need to try to figure out what killed this man. If there's no lungs in his, if there's no water in his lungs, then it couldn't have been a drowning.
Then maybe he had his lungs removed.
That's true. If the lungs are absent, then we got even bigger problems.
That is interesting though, right? Like, because if you go into the water after you're already dead, then you don't breathe. So the water doesn't get in there.
Yeah. And it becomes important later as well, right? But if you get a cut after you're dead, you don't. Your body doesn't try to fix it. So there are just like little signs, which is super cool. And we get the impression through a couple little scenes that Ichabod Crane is at like the bleeding edge of some scientific investigation techniques. And nobody is drinking his Kool-Aid.
Bit of a pariah.
So they think he's a bit of a crank.
Yeah.
Right? Almost like Belle's dad in Beauty and the Beast.
Not appreciated in his time.
He created something that splits wood that is as big as a house. So it's like, maybe it's not the best machine ever made.
Yeah, do you get some steampunk vibes from him and the things that he's using?
A little bit, now that you say that. That's kind of cool. Everything's got like 8 hinges and joints and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And so basically, I'm not sure if it's a judge or what, but all of a sudden they're in this big room with a bunch of, you know, people in wigs.
I think he's a judge.
And he's saying, you know, we need to update our techniques. We need to be able to find out how people died, not just say they're in the river, they're a drowner, they're at the bottom of a staircase, clearly they fell. This judge, who is the great Christopher Lee, and I saw something saying that this movie he credits for invigorating his film career in some ways, because people thought of him differently or something afterward, and helped him get cast in a little trilogy called The Lord of the Rings.
Have you ever heard the story of him in Lord of the Rings?
Stabbing.
You have being given the note of like, I want you to make this sound like you've been stabbed.
Yeah.
And he says to Peter Jackson, no, that's not what it sounds like when someone's stabbed.
Exactly. I did it.
Because he had a wild life. Because he was a soldier in World War II.
Right.
Just like people of a certain generation, the things they lived through, you know?
Yeah, true
like
that.
Just the periods of time.
You're right.
Do you want to hear something so interesting?
Yes.
These 3 people were born in the same year. Martin Luther King Jr., Anne Frank.
Yeah.
And Barbara Walters.
Yeah. Isn't that wild,
isn't
right?
Isn't that wild?
Because I think of Anne Frank as being born like the dark ages.
I know.
And meanwhile, Barb Walters, she was in the modern age, according to me. Okay. So basically this judge tells Ichabod, like, we're sick of hearing your story. We're sick of your ways. You can either cool your heels in a jail cell.
Ichabod.
Yeah, we can either put you in jail.
Yes, we'll put you in jail, or you can go to Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, or have you ever heard of this place, Sleepy Hollow? They've had 3 murders in a row in quick succession. If you can find the murderer, then we'll essentially know your methods can work. And he says, you will be put to the test. He learns that there were 3 persons murdered in Sleepy Hollow, a place that he hasn't heard of, and that they were all beheadings.
And he kind of gulps. He's obviously a bit of a...
He's squeamish.
A lily-livered man.
Yes, he is. He is. Yeah. He's kind of weak of resolve, at least in some ways, I suppose, because he keeps doing hard stuff.
But I guess, like we say, he is not fearless, but he is brave.
Good point, because he clearly is affected by the idea of going there. And not to mention, he's going to leave New York City to go to this place he's never heard of before. Probably leaving some creature comforts behind, I would have to think.
He's going to leave the city that never sleeps and goes to Sleepy Hollow. What's the most lively city you've ever visited? Oh, well, I think I know.
Las Vegas, baby.
Yeah, viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's like literally the city that never sleeps.
Did you love it?
I had a great time in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I certainly did. I'm not a gambler. I had a great time, though. It was just like there was a lot to see. There was a lot to do. What about you?
The most lively city I've ever been to, because I've never been to Vegas, was, in fact, New York.
Yeah, and you said it was, like, amazing just how loud it was, right?
Yes. And you know what I found? My hotel was in very, very, very busy part, like, right near Central Park in Manhattan.
Ever heard of it?
Manhattan, New York.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the boroughs of New York? And I said to you when I came back that I've never really considered myself one particularly sensitive to sounds from
sensory
like
sensory input.
Yeah, from like a sensory overload perspective.
Yeah.
But I found it absolutely cacophonous when I was there.
Wow.
I was like a little bit overwhelmed by the just the sound. And I said to the friend of mine that I was there visiting, who lives there, I said to her, when there's thunder, can you even hear it? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't even joking. And she was like, yeah, you can. But I was like, there were so many things that already sounded like thunder because it's just a lot of like heavy machinery right in these echoey, bouncing off the walls of all these huge buildings. So it's just so different from what I'm used to in a small town.
And she's like, do you know what you look like to me with your cheap bag and your sensitive ears?
You look like a rube.
You look like a rube.
That I am.
You probably did look like a rube.
As my husband and I were there, I was like, we're country mice for sure.
So Ichabod Crane begins the long cart journey to Sleepy Hollow. Mm-hmm. So just a lot of quick cuts of the cart, the horses.
And some exposition again by set dressing as he's looking through his book, his journal,
of his,
which has
like,
his own designs in it of his contraptions. And you're also has like some notes about the murders and where he's going. So I thought it's interesting.
That was cool.
He's reading it like it's a book, but it's his own writing.
Anytime you have a chance to read something in this movie, it seems it gives you lots of info.
That's true. Right?
It's not just like the props department just came up with whatever. It's cool to catch little details like that.
Well, you know what? I think that with most movies, if you're looking, you'll find them because the production teams that go into making most movies are so big.
Right.
And everyone takes their job seriously. So it's like everyone is thinking if you're willing to look. You know, the costume designers, the set dressers, it's all there if you're willing to look.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And then when he arrives, everyone's like slamming their windows as they see him coming by, and he's very isolated, walking down a long street, very fish out of water. Mm-hmm. And you know what it made me think of? And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, oh my God, it's so much that is it reminded me of The Wicker Man when Detective Howie goes to this island and he's an investigator
as
well.
Detective, yeah.
Nobody wants him to be there. And his initial reaction from people is kind of frosty. That's what I was thinking of.
But I think basically nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows, oh, we're expecting a constable from New York.
That's true, because he kind of surprises people.
Yeah, nobody realizes that until he goes to the party and tells them.
Yeah, so he goes right to a house party. At first, I thought it was a tavern, but it's not. It's someone's home. Mm-hmm. And right beside the door, there's like a heavy makeout session happening.
Yes.
Like he's maybe 3 feet away from it.
Yes.
Heavy breathing, husky, grunting voices. It's like
vigorous movement.
Yikes. Yeah, exactly.
Like maybe there's copulating happening.
A little pornographic at any rate. And he just kind of keeps looking forward and doesn't pay it much mind. It's a very well attended party that he walks into as well. And we know this
seems to be the whole town's there.
Because we know that this is a small, quaint, mostly Dutch farming community, right? And so to have the first scene in the town kind of happen in this well appointed party was kind of interesting.
Did you know that New York was once called New Amsterdam?
No, I didn't.
It was initially, initially is not the right word, but at one point early in its history, it was settled by, before it was settled by the British, it was settled by the Dutch.
Really? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. In the middle of this party, there's a bunch of adults, right? Playing some game.
Young adults, I want to say like pubescent to early 20s, like marrying age.
Yeah, coming of age. Mm-hmm. And it's like, pickety witch, who's gonna
kiss
something the pickety witch?
Yeah.
Kiss them, right? So they're playing spin the bottle, but it's like spin the witch.
Spin the witch, she's just twirling around.
Which is pretty good. That sounds like a good game for, it sounds like a spin that you would put on a game to play at your Halloween party. Spin the witch. That person kind of accidentally locks in on Ichabod Crane, says, feeling his face and has to try to guess who it is. So it's kind of cheating because he's a complete stranger, which he says.
Because like in a small town, she's like, well, I must know who this is.
I know the feeling of this face. So this is Katrina Van Tassel. He's at the home of the Van Tassels. And she is played by Scream Queen Christina Ricci. You think it's fair to say?
Scream Queen because of the Addams Family?
Yeah, the Addams Family. This movie, I'm thinking there might be more. Casper, the friendly ghost, as a child.
She's a scream queen.
Yeah, that's all it takes. She's in Wednesday, too.
A successful child actress.
And still at it.
Anyway, Christina Ricci, spinning around, giving people kisses.
He basically says, well, I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm a stranger. And she says, well, I'll take a kiss from me then. And does give him a kiss on the cheek.
Yeah, I like it as a meet cute.
And then who comes down the steps but Albus Dumbledore himself.
Albus Dumbledore, the second iteration.
Yes, yeah. The second. And
which
this,
is the better one, first or the second?
Well, the first.
The first.
The first, I have to say. This is Baltus Van Tassel.
Baltus.
He is basically the patriarch of the home. He's the head of the household, and he is
somewhat of the town, well-respected man about town.
Yeah, and he's Christina Ricci's father. Mm-hmm. He's accompanied by his wife, and basically he says, you know, I'm Ichabod Crane. I'm an investigator from New York. They say, well, you know, we're so happy to have you, and Lady Van Tassel says yes, and we hope that you'll stay in our home, mm-hmm. And he agrees.
Very readily. He doesn't do any, oh, I couldn't possibly.
No, he's like, well, sounds good.
Thank
sounds
you,
good.
I will take my bags upstairs.
Exactly. Jenna, why is that grave behind you so, why is the earth so loose?
Oh, it must be a recent one, John.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, business is always booming for cemeteries,
do you
right?
Do you hear that bell ringing?
Yeah, what does that signify?
I know that it means something when there's a bell ringing in a grave.
Yeah, they put a little bell, maybe if the grave needs working on or something. Was that it?
Yeah, or it's just the wind. Do you hear a banging and scratching?
Hang on, let me listen.
Help me.
Probably just the wind.
Yeah, I think it's a trick of the wind. But anyway, I digress, people. He ends up meeting with all these old men in a chamber, and that includes Baltus Van Tassel, right?
Yeah, this is a super fun setup. I love the way he goes into the room and they're all already seated or standing.
And looking suspicious.
And kind of like a cool tableau where they're all arranged in the room and they all turn to look at him.
Looks very Renaissance, right?
It's a great setup because it's so intentional. It looks good.
Yeah.
It's put you in a time and place, right?
Super cool.
Because it feels old-timey, but like used really well. I love it. And yeah, a bunch of kind of creepy old guys in this room.
Bunch of creepy old guys. We have Baltus, who describes himself as a prosperous farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other men elaborate that, yeah, you're also like the banker or the landlord of this town. And he's kind of like you said.
I think he's just the richest
guy in town, right?
And meanwhile, everyone else has an official title and he's just almost like the de facto leader of the town.
Yeah.
But unofficially. So.
Yeah.
There's a magistrate there. There's the notary there.
So there's
Reverend
Dr. Thomas Lancaster, Reverend Steenrick, Magistrate Samuel Phillips, who is Uncle Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. There's so many Harry Potter people. And we didn't mention Lady Van Tassel is
Rita Skeeter. Rita Skeeter.
And we have James Hardenbrooke, the notary,
mm-hmm.
who looks half dead.
Here we are. Stereotypical millennials, we love Harry Potter.
Yeah, I have to say it.
It's true, though. We do.
Yeah.
No matter what J.K. Rowling may be getting up to in the moldy walls of her castle.
It was you who said people suspect she might have black mold in her house.
But man, we love that IP.
I do. That was the first book I ever enjoyed reading, and I haven't looked back since then.
Well, that's a really beautiful thing.
Crane kind of walks around speaking to all of them.
Yep.
Almost like an accusatory way, right?
I think he's trying to make it clear that everyone is a suspect.
Everyone is on notice. Yes, he's putting this town on notice. Mm-hmm. You're right. He's detailing the case. He's telling them things they already know. Mm-hmm. This person was killed first. This person was killed next. There's been 3 known victims and all decapitated. And then they kind of tell him details he didn't even know. He mm-hmm. says, like, were the heads found? And they say, no, the heads were never found.
Taken, they say. Not lost, not missing,
but taken. Yeah. And I thought the same thing that you just said. He's trying to turn the screws on these guys a bit. So Peter Van Garrett and Dirk Van Garrett, father and son, both murdered. Also, the widow Winship, all decapitated. And he said, is anyone suspected? He asks of these fancy gentlemen. And they say, yeah, the horseman.
Yeah, they already know it's the horseman. And then doesn't Dumbledore use his beautiful voice to tell a little bit of lore, do a little bit of a lore drop here?
He does, yeah. He relishes a little bit telling the story of the horseman, right? They take the heads to hell.
So he describes that the headless horseman of legend is a Hessian mercenary. So they describe it as a mercenary, but I actually looked it up. And Hessians were not mercenaries. They were auxiliaries. So they were German soldiers, basically more or less purchased by the British government to make money for Germany. And at one point, they made up one third of the British Revolutionary War forces. Pretty huge.
That's a huge percentage for
and
sure.
So they were a huge part of the Revolutionary War. So on like the loyalist side, obviously the Brits versus the Americans would be Americans.
Right.
And so that's what he is. And Dumbledore describes that he has joined up basically not for money,
right,
but for love of carnage. He just loves
violence, loves
killing.
He's
got bloodlust.
And we see a flash of him, right? As portrayed by Christopher Walken,
yes,
of all things.
Interesting choice.
Indeed, because he doesn't speak one word, right?
No, not this whole movie. So it's just really hamming it up. Christopher Walken has filed down sharp teeth.
Yep.
He's got crazy hair. He is astride a giant horse chopping off heads left and right.
Yes, famous for cutting off people's heads, according to Mr. Van Tassel.
Famous for riding into battle on his steed and chopping off people's heads.
Yep. And he met his end as well when it seems like he got chased down by a bunch of soldiers and ran into the woods.
And had his own head chopped off.
Ran into a couple girls and one of them gave away his position that he met in the woods. And then they chop off his head, they bury him beside a tree, and they put the whole thing to bed. What did you think of the little battle scene?
When he's chopping heads off?
Well, there was that, but then his horse kind of gets shot down. He runs into the woods and then the soldiers catch up to him, but he basically like almost kills them all, right?
He does that, in front of the girls there,
right,
that he had encountered. So he's obviously a warrior to be feared.
I thought that the battle scenes were shot well. They were pretty cool action scenes, actually. And so Mr. Van Tassel says, you know, even to this day, people are scared to go to the woods because of the seed of evil
planted in the ground that day.
Yes. And one of them, I'm sure it's the Reverend, says, put down all your science books and pick this book up.
Yes.
And meanwhile, Holy Bible.
He actually gives Ichabod a clue because he slaps this Bible down in front of him as like a little bit of prop work here, saying this is the only book that you need. And then Ichabod flips it open, and because it's a family Bible, it has a family tree in the front, and he can see that the Van Garretts and the Van Tassels are related.
Yes, okay, great point. Mm-hmm. So Van Garretts, being the people who are already killed, are related to the Van Tassels, whose homies are. Crane is kind of being
John.
Yes?
Was the lid of that sarcophagus off-kilter when we arrived?
I don't know. Knowing Joe... I can't see him leaving cattywampus like this.
He runs a tight ship. You know what? We'll just go back to the story here.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I've heard, never worked in a restaurant, but basically like the guy who closed last night and then the people open and they're like, who the hell closed last night? We'll mention it to him.
Do you hear the grinding though? Stone on stone.
I thought that there was probably like a water wheel somewhere that they were making flour with.
I think, no, someone's making a mojito nearby. It's just the muddling of
equipment.
With
a mortar and pestle?
It's a mortar and pestle. Must be that.
Stone, mortar, stone.
Jeeves? Jeeves, are you making mojitos requested?
Yes. Are you getting mojitos ready for us?
That's very thoughtful of you.
Well, and if you're not, could you please? We could use one.
Excellent idea, sir.
Now I need a mojito.
I can't say it without needing one. Yes, thank you, Jeeves. So we actually have Jeeves set up nearby. You know, unfortunately, he's got his own grandpappy to visit, but you know, it's not too far from here, and he's well within distance to help us, like he did when we were at the Spookington Manor.
Indispensable. Don't know what we ever did without him.
Don't know what this podcast would be without him. We cut to an outdoor scene, sheep running, fog rolling. There's a guy, kind of a night's watchman, I guess. He's almost in like a tree stand.
Yeah, I think a deer stand.
Yeah, and he's watching the fog and he's like, come out, you devil. He knows something's happening.
Do you think people who don't hunt know what a deer stand is? Not that we hunt.
I bet they could put it together.
It's a place that you hunt deer from.
It's up in a tree and you get a good vantage point on the deer. Yeah, and then you can just shoot them up.
Shoot them up and eat them. You know what? I was driving home from work the other day and I was driving behind a pickup truck with a moose in the back.
Like a dead one?
A whole dead moose in the back.
Oh, wow. Yes. How Canadian is that? Yeah, we see the watchman kind of watching for, I guess what he thinks is the horseman to come out.
Oh, and do you see the mist come out of the bush
forest
and turn out all the torches, and some deer also kind of stampede out of the bush and away, clearly evading something.
Yeah, and the horseman is almost always announced by, you know, rolling fog and lightning as well.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just so atmospheric.
Exactly. And it's not pulling any punches with like, oh, maybe that'd be a little silly or a little hokey. It's like, no, this is a spooky movie. It's going to be spooky atmosphere.
And it is a little silly at times, and they just kind of go with it.
In the same way that Santa Claus is silly, and it's magic. It's seasonal magic.
All of a sudden, the rifleman is being chased down a path. Nice, well-defined path with dense trees on either side. It's like a hallway.
And classic running in a straight line instead of jumping into the bush.
And he's being chased by a headless horseman who cuts off his head, and we see like a shot of his head in suspended animation.
And then laying on the ground with a fearful expression.
Exactly. So that's very Tim Burton, I think, as well. There are a few little tricks and things like that that are reminding me of Tim Burton. And that's one of them, like a kind of a almost over the top goofy face that he's got on. There's a certain amount of, I don't know if camp's the right word, but there's a certain amount of it. It's tongue in cheek in its own way, too. And it just has its own style, right? The next day, I guess, Crane shows up to inspect the slain body. What did you think about this scene? It's in the woods. All the fancy men are there from before.
I like it. I think it's really fun, a really fun setup. But this is what I was talking about, some of this stuff being steampunk, because it's like technological, but not real. Like those things didn't exist at the time. Like him.
And they're over the top.
When he pours the powder over the blood, I assume.
He basically pours it like at the mouth of the neck.
So where I guess there would have.
Onto the ground.
I was assuming there would have been some blood there. And then he says, ah, yes, just as I thought. It was one singular thrust.
And based on this chemical, he says, based on a chemical reaction, it was one singular thrust.
That's just nonsensical.
Like, that's just silly.
Yeah.
Then he puts on some watchmaking glasses that like help him to way zoom in and like everything's like, whoosh, 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 you know, and like everything's
funny.
Made out of metal. And so I agree. I think steampunk is kind of a good shout there. And he kind of lifts the flap of the neck skin and a cockroach comes out and he's a very squeamish man.
Yes, which is just great. So like we say, he's squeamish, but he's doing it anyway, obviously for just passion for the job.
He's apprehensive about touching the dead body, but he does it anyway. So the deceased was named Jonathan Masbeth. And he's kind of giving these guys, so, you know, some of the people he first met at the manor, grief about like moving the body and all this stuff that they've just got no clue about. You know, he's basically expecting them to keep certain standards that nobody even agrees are going to be of any use. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. He says, you must never move the body. And he says, why? And he's like, because.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I thought the chemical reaction thing was really funny. And he brings up the fact that the wound itself was cauterized. So basically, on impact, there wasn't a lot of blood loss or anything like that because the burning of something sealed the kind of, capillaries, the veins kind of closed, right? And so then all his more superstitious people that he's with are like, the devil's fire.
That's what Uncle Vernon says.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I think that's great.
We cut to the funeral. The priest is not giving a very comforting sermon. He's saying the devil walks about seeing who he can devour.
Yeah, can you imagine living in a time when people really thought that you were just at risk from the devil at all times?
It would make me feel a little bit paranoid, I think.
Yeah.
So Ichabod's approached by a boy. What would you guess this kid's age to be?
12? What would you say?
12 might be right. 10, 12, you know, just about to start his own family probably in the 1800s or wherever. Where are we?
1700s. Because he
says, soon to be 1800s.
He says it's almost the 19th century, which means 1800s.
So 1700s, yeah. So
America became a nation in what, 1796 or something?
I don't know.
Hey Siri, when was America founded? 1776.
In the 70s.
Yeah, it was the 70s. They're all wearing bell bottoms.
This boy, who was referred to as Young Masbeth.
He was this guy's son.
He was Jonathan Masbeth's son, and he basically says, hey, you have no one to help you. Let me help you. Let me be basically your helper person.
And avenge my father.
Avenge my father, who was just slain. Basically, Ichabod says, no, 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 got your mother to take care of now. And he says, she's also dead. Reluctantly, Ichabod does decide to let him accompany him. He says, go find yourself servants' quarters at the Van Tassel place.
Mm-hmm. And then also here in this scene, Uncle Vernon drops some knowledge to Ichabod, kind of on the quiet. Like he's...
So Phillip's the magistrate, yes.
And he's kind of doing it in secret where he says, in a bit of a riddle to Ichabod,
mm-hmm.
there were 5 bodies and 4 graves.
Yes, and I think initially he doesn't really know how this could be, but what Ichabod and young Masbeth do is they dig up all the graves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that we get to see kind of some of the surgical applications of what Ichabod has designed. So
yes. So this is a really silly part because they take the widow Winship's body onto the operating table in, I guess, the surgery, it may be called, of this town.
And he says, we must operate. And the doctor's like, well, she's dead.
She's dead.
And he's like, I of course mean we'll be using the operation table.
And so this is obviously silly because by this time, the widow Winship has been dead since before Ichabod got there.
Yeah, certainly.
And yet he winds up covered in blood.
Okay, I knew that couldn't be the way it would go. It's like obviously for shock.
It's just silly.
But they're spurting blood during this autopsy.
Exactly. There's no pressure going on to spurt anything.
It would be a pressureless system by then, pretty much, except for maybe some gas.
It doesn't take long for a dead thing to break down.
True that. It would have been pretty gross.
Although I guess it's cool. So maybe it slower than sometimes, but...
Yeah, it would have been cool in the dirt, for sure. And it is like an iconic scene, though.
It's great.
He gets splashed with blood right in his face, and then he comes out to meet
looking
these
like
men,
a butcher.
And he looks like a butcher, indeed. And what he has found, though, is that the lady, the widow Winship, was with child, as he says. And had the cut already been made?
It was stabbed. She was stabbed through the belly. You assume by the horseman, he's killing the baby too.
So the horseman, not knowing much more than any of these people about anatomy and things like that.
But they know where a baby grows because you can see it.
I know, but surely just cutting off the head would have been enough.
Oh, yes. It was just for good measure.
I suppose. And to be gross and a bad, bad guy. I think that this scene kind of stuck out with me. This is one of the ones that felt most familiar as well. This is the reason I kind of in my head before we put this on again to watch for this year, I kind of had the memory that he was like a surgeon or something like that. And I can see why I thought that.
Because he does this.
He does stuff like this. And detectives don't do stuff like this. Not now.
No, I guess he's a jack of all trades. He's the coroner too.
In the CSI.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that this was actually a really great scene, although it was a little silly, but it was cool. And again, that just...
But I'm along for the ride.
That intense red blood.
Yeah.
That this movie really sets up so well.
All over his pale Johnny Depp face beside his black Johnny Depp hair.
Exactly. It's like, wow, talk about jumping off the page, right? You know what I found interesting? Mm-hmm. He walks out to these men in their fancy wigs and all that, and he says, we are dealing with a madman because, you know, he killed a pregnant woman and her unborn child. Mm-hmm. But surely everyone already thought that already.
Yeah.
It's like, it's bad.
He's chopping
but what
off
was
heads.
Going on was really bad already. I mean, you know what I mean? But I get what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, do you know no decency? You know, cutting off heads and going the extra mile, as you said. Soon we get a scene as well where they're going across the kind of iconic bridge. That's a covered bridge.
A covered bridge, yeah.
And he's walking along it and the frogs are croaking his name. They're like, Ichabod.
Ichabod. I didn't notice that.
When you go back and watch, it's a funny effect because it's like it kind of sounds like Ichabod and it kind of sounds like a frog, but it doesn't sound like either one all that much.
That's very funny.
So he's getting all freaked out, as I would too. And all of a sudden, he is being chased by a horseman with no head where his head should be.
Could it be the headless horseman?
Well, we're going to find out. But
feared creature of legend?
What is that crawling on the gravestone over there? Is that... It's a black cat.
Oh. Come here. Ah!
Well, jeez. I think she could sense that you're
that I'm a dog person.
In your bones dog person, exactly. Yeah, all of a sudden he's being chased. But what's really happened is that he's been pranked senseless by some townies.
Yeah, who looks very smug about it indeed.
Who pulled off a hell of a prank. So basically they have a coat over this guy's head.
With some sandbags on his shoulders.
To kind of give the effect of shoulders. And he throws a flaming jack-o'-lantern.
Straight at Ichabod.
Right into Ichabod's face. And that knocks him down. And we get one of his many fainting scenes. But
yes.
What we get with those fainting scenes is his first flashback to memories of his mother. Now, these are the scenes that were really eye-opening to me because I remember being at a sleepover and really being unnerved by these scenes.
Yeah.
Where we're flashing back to young child Ichabod and his mother.
His very beautiful, witchy mother.
Very beautiful. Very witchy.
I think over the course of all of these flashbacks,
yeah,
what we get is that his mother was a good, loving, attentive mother. She was very beautiful. She was a witch. She did some magic. And there was a man in their life who didn't like it.
It was his father.
His father sought to punish her for it and ultimately kills her for it.
We see lots of creepy imagery, like a red door in a white room. Really quick images, some of these. It's like his mom was kind of hauntingly beautiful, and there was a certain kind of scary aspect to it, too, because she was doing these witchy things. She starts to fly at one point. These scenes were really, really cool.
Yeah, they're very beautiful, and they seem like a dream, and yet you also know them to be true to his past. So something interesting. Flashbacks are, well, this is probably well enough known, but I'll just confirm it as fact. Mm-hmm. Flashbacks are a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder. So him having these memories appear to him in this way could be pretty true to life for someone who lost his mother in a traumatic way as a young person, which he did.
And seems to find them intrusive, too.
Yes.
That they're not welcome. You know, they're not a fond memory.
No.
Maybe they could have been if they weren't marred by...
Marred, indeed,
the death of his mom, right? He meets Katrina in the home soon, and she hides the books that she's reading, and he kind of asks her why she feels the need to do that. And what she says is that her dad believed that her mother reading romance books contributed to the brain fever that killed her. Right. And the nurse who cared for her dead mother is now her stepmother. So Lady Van Tassel in the current stage was caretaking her dying mother.
Speaking of brain fever, you and I have talked before about things that we've experienced in our lives that would have killed us. And for you, it was your own brain fever. We're talking about like if we lived in the 1700s. So you would have died at age 17?
Yeah, thereabouts. Had meningitis. It was awful.
Yeah.
Believe the hype. It sucked.
You were so terribly sick, and my mom made you come to my stage show because I was in a play.
So that made it. Yeah, you can imagine how much worse that made it. She's like, might be his last day to walk this earth. Maybe a little music will help.
And I think I would have died in childbirth. I had medical assistance that wouldn't have been available at the time.
Yeah, other than that, not too many life-threatening things.
Mm-mm.
Ichabod does bring up, hey, why didn't anyone mention that the Van Garretts are kith and kin to the Van Tassels?
What a nice expression.
Yeah, pretty cool. So like you said, he sees the family tree, and basically Katrina says, well, I mean, it's a small town. We're all kind of connected in some way.
He says it like a gotcha, and she really brushes it off. Yeah. We're all related by blood or marriage.
And apparently the Van Garretts used to be the rich ones, you know, before the Van Tassels started to prosper more.
Brains, what about brains?
I didn't say brains.
I heard you say it.
I mean, I think I would know if I said
it. Well, someone said it. Jeeves?
Is it that? Could it be that green man walking back there? Jeeves, who is this gentleman? Can you go check him out, please? Is he allowed to be here?
John, he looks a little worse for wear.
Maybe, Jeeves, can we maybe send this man to a hospital?
Could you please call an ambulance for this man? He looks very unwell.
Right away, ma'am.
Jenna, don't pay it any mind. I'm sure Jeeves will figure it out.
John, he looks half dead.
You know, maybe he's not a millennial. Maybe he's not aging well.
Jeeves, you've completed your annual CPR and first aid.
You're still certified, aren't you?
Okay, if you wouldn't mind, please,
yeah,
please do arrange an ambulance for this man.
Just do your best.
We appreciate it. We're going to keep going with the podcast. Thank you, Jeeves.
Thanks, bye. Jeeves. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad he's in the ambulance now.
Yeah.
It looked like he needed it.
You were right. He looked pretty bad.
Looked pretty peaky, I would say.
Yeah. He kind of gets some lore. Katrina says that it was the Van Garretts who gave her father some land.
And she remembers being poor.
She remembers being poor, living in an old stone house. She ends up giving Ichabod one of her mother's books. And it was, in fact,
a book of spells, which is called a
grimoire.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love saying that, right? Yeah.
Katrina ends up taking him into the woods to the remains of the stone home. So there's like the hearth and the chimney are essentially still standing, right?
Yeah, it seems the rest has,
you know, been lost to time, essentially.
Yeah, even though there's not that much time that's passed.
Couldn't have been. Yeah, maybe 20 years, maybe 10.
Must have been very run down. And she sees an archer carved into the back of the hearth.
And remembers it. Mm-hmm. And also basically alludes to the fact that she used to do drawings in front of the hearth in the dirt with her sticks, just like Johnny Depp's
mom did.
Some
kind of witchy drawings.
Symbols. It looked like stuff from Hereditary with the necklace and
Except
stuff.
Except a little bit cuter.
Yeah, a little bit less sinister looking. She also notices that Ichabod has these scars on his hand.
Which are almost like...
They're like a patterned grid of dots.
Yeah, a grid is exactly right, of dots.
You would use them to make drawings that followed a grid. Yeah, exactly. And they're pale, they're very much healed, but she asks him how he got them.
He says he can't remember.
He also shows kind of that trick little toy that he's got.
An illusion.
Yeah, and it's like essentially like a circle of paper or leather or something. And on one side, a cardinal. On the other side, an empty cage. And they're on
and
strings.
And when you spin it fast enough, your eye sees the cardinal in the cage.
They join, right? Mm-hmm. He also says that basically sometimes truth can seem like a trick.
Yeah.
Another thing that he sees soon is all of the men, the magistrate, the doctor, all those people we described, arguing in a room. And then the magistrate, Phillips, is suddenly trying to leave town.
Uncle Vernon, he follows him and is accusing him of flying the coop when he said, you tried to help me once, basically what's changed?
And he says, helping you has put me in mortal dread.
In fear for his life.
And he says, you told me she was pregnant, essentially, and therefore I deduce that you are the father. And he says, no. She told me she was pregnant. She wanted legal protection for her child, essentially.
Yeah, she confided in me as the magistrate for advice on how to set her child up for success kind of thing.
Yeah, and this is the widow Winship. All of a sudden, we see the roiling fog. We see lightning.
Harbingers.
Yes, indeed. We know that the horseman is coming. They haven't clocked it yet, but he's saying, you a magistrate and with your head filled with such nonsense. He's basically, you know, condemning and scolding him for believing in fairy tales, essentially, because he has an amulet to protect him from the horsemen.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the pounding hooves and just, it's really intense. The soundscape when the horseman is in frame is always really cool.
Yeah.
It's a very thunderous
It's the
feeling.
Same every time, and it's pretty badass and effective every
100%.
Time.
100%. Yeah, we should just put in a clip. He's fast. He's intense. He has such purposeful movement. He never misses.
Yeah, he's a one-track mind.
Yes, indeed. He's driven beyond the likes of a regular human. Mm-hmm. And he cuts off the magistrate's head as he runs by. It does like a 720-degree spin on his shoulders.
Spin. I love it. It's silly, but super effective. And yet
it's
grim
awesome.
At the same time. I love it.
What did you think about the fact that Mr. Phillips's head rolls all the way like 30 yards into Johnny Depp's like crotch?
Yeah, like mouth first into Johnny Depp's crotch. That I'm like, maybe a bit crass.
Yeah, like what are they trying to get at with that?
I don't know. But then I do really like the horseman then is thundering towards
so cool
Ichabod.
You think, oh my god, he's in danger.
It's so great, but he again, the one track mind, he doesn't care. He just stabs straight into the head and takes it home with him.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I think that's great, and it paints such a picture too. Like he's not a mindless killing machine. He has a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. He is like an errand boy, essentially.
Yeah,
right,
as we come to
but
find
a
out
fucking scary one. Mm-hmm. And that gives Crane the perfect opportunity to faint again. So we're back at the manor, and now Crane is in on the whole thing. He's hip to what's going on, and he's saying, it was a headless horseman, a dead one.
And they're like, we know, we told you.
Yeah, we tried to tell you. I thought that was pretty funny.
And he faints again.
I think that he's probably got some neurological problems.
Maybe he just has really low blood pressure.
Oh, okay, yeah, maybe he's anemic.
Yeah.
He looks anemic.
He's very pale.
Everybody in this film looks anemic.
Do you know what's interesting? When you're pregnant, your blood pressure gets low.
Right.
Because basically all your vessels dilate. get bigger.
Really?
Yeah, that's interesting. You get more blood. In your pregnancy, guess how much extra blood you get.
4 liters.
No, that's like how much, almost how much
you have. Is that how much is in the human body?
A pound.
A pound of blood?
Yeah.
What is that laid upon your shoulder?
What is it?
I think that's a skeleton hand. Turn around.
That must have been there when I sat down.
Oh, man. This place is a dump. They just have this bunch of bones out here. How did it end up on your shoulder?
Yeah, get off me, damn bones. I'm going to brush them off my shoulder.
Jeeves, can you come sweep this up, buddy? Because I don't feel right about leaving these bones sat there on the ground.
Right you are, sir.
Maybe they have a lost and found at this cemetery?
You know what? That mausoleum is open.
Was it open when we got here?
Must have been. Jeeves, if you wouldn't mind, please, could you put these bones in there? That must be where they belong.
Young Masbeth assumes he'll probably head back to the city then because he's so scared. But he does faint again. We get more of the mom stuff. We see her spinning, flying. She's in nature. She clearly relishes being in nature, which Ichabod later tells Katrina as well, right? The dad comes in and he looks just like a classic kind of bureaucrat, essentially,
yeah,
or something like that.
A wig on.
A wig, and he's all buttoned up, almost like in a military garb or something. He throws her down in front of the hearth, and he slams the Bible down and, like, points at her drawings, all the rest, right?
He's clearly not happy. It's like a silent film, all this bit.
Yeah, it's like a tone poem, but they're certainly getting the message across.
Yeah.
He did not accept her way of life. He probably fell in love with her because she was freaking crazy beautiful, because other than that, doesn't seem they have too much in common.
Nope. Definitely, it could be that. I've been told men are into beautiful women. I think I've heard that.
Mighty empires have fallen to to that particular...
Yeah, like Greece.
...fixation, right? You know, kind of proving young Masbeth wrong. Crane, when he wakes from his unconsciousness, he stands at the top of a kind of walkway and looks down at the people, including Mr. Van Tassel and young Masbeth, and he says, I need able men to accompany me to the western woods. Who's with me? And basically only young Masbeth says that he will go.
Yeah. Right? Not only is he not running back to New York, he's actually going right into the belly of the beast.
Exactly. He knows that something connects the families together. He's kind of chatting about that to Masbeth as they're in the woods. Masbeth also recounts hearing from his father that before the Van Garretts were killed, there was an argument at night between father and son. So those were two of the first victims. Then Jonathan Masbeth, so young Masbeth's father, was called up to see the head of the household, Van Garrett. His dad was essentially one of their helpers, one of their workers, and he called him up basically to his office after that argument with his son. They stumble on a witch's burrow. What did you think of the scenes with the witch?
Great. Very, very witchy. She's all in a veil. You can't ever really see her face during this interaction.
Love stuff like that. You know what it reminds me of? Remember The Others?
Mm-hmm, with the veil. But do you know what the setting of the little cave looks like? It looks like the cave, except creepified, in Brave.
It totally does.
Yeah.
100%. Because it's not like a little witch's hut. It's like in some rock.
Yeah, it's
in rocks. It's like a wolf's den.
And I like, she tells Masbeth to leave, and then she sets...
Whatever you hear, don't come in.
Don't come in. And then she sets Ichabod up at the table, hilariously yeah. puts cuffs on.
Shackles.
And then tries to, like, lurch across the table at Ichabod and says, yeah, okay, good, can't reach him, perfect. And then she casts a spell using a few witchy items in her stocks, including, like, a bat.
Yeah, that like she fully toothpaste tubes
him
the out. Blood
exactly,
out of.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. I thought that was very funny.
That was good. And there was a lot of blood. She says, you know, I can tell you about the underworld. I can tell you more about this horseman. But basically, I have to channel someone to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the big reveal when she is possessed by some creepy thing to deliver the...
Pretty good.
Kind of silly.
Yeah.
She got a long snake tongue. And not just that, but her eyes are out on stalks like a cartoon.
Very Tim Burton.
Right? Exactly.
It's
literally.
Like Beetlejuice.
Yes, it's like Beetlejuice, and it is like there's some stuff like that in Wednesday too. Just like there's something about like the eyes bulging, the eyes like poking out. And so I thought that was silly. I thought she was much more scary when she was talking nonsense and had the veil over her face. There's something about obfuscating your identity that just plays into the creep factor really quickly, right? And a veil, maybe more than anything, because it's not like you have a balaclava on, partially seen but partially disguised. It's very interesting. It's almost like when bad guys in movies wear like the pantyhose kind of thing.
Pantyhose are way worse than like a ski mask, definitely.
So her tongue pops out, becomes a snake, all this stuff. And in her thaumaturgy voice, she's saying, follow the Indian trail to where the sun dies, to the tree of the dead. And they do, you know, he goes out and tells Nazbeth, this is what we have to do. They keep walking and they see a figure on a white horse and in white cloaks, and it's Katrina. And she basically says, hey, I came to help you because none of the guys would.
Yeah, and I love how quickly, and no bones about it, this movie is about the romance, because they almost kiss right here.
Pretty quickly.
He's like, oh, you came out to see me. You must really dig me, basically.
Yep, exactly.
And they're
exactly.
both into it. Great.
And she says, you know, I came to help because the men wouldn't. And he says, well, I'm now twice the man.
Yeah, I thought that was so sweet. Yeah, I like that.
He's got some...
Riz?
I was going to say, he's got some turn of the century riz.
Yeah.
Turn of the 18th century.
Because I feel like another movie may have had him say, well, you shouldn't have come out here and chastised her, but he's just like, thank you.
Yeah, he very quickly accepts that he likes her, she likes him, and he accepts her help. They find the Tree of the Dead. It's kind of grand and big and twisted. It doesn't have branches. It's dead.
Does the top of it to you look like a creature with its tongue out?
Yeah, it did. I thought it looked like a creature. And did you like the look of the Tree of the Dead? They could have gone a lot of different ways.
I thought it looked great.
Yeah, and has all these twisty roots at the bottom. Ichabod quickly realizes as well that it's dripping blood, which is super cool.
Yeah, which I guess is like sap. Were we supposed to think it's bleeding?
I think so.
Okay.
It's just because it's a creepy, enchanted, bad tree. Mm-hmm. In terms of like, he gets the blood on his fingers, and like I said, it jumps off the page, the red. So did the white when he saw her in the woods.
Yeah.
And she's in this like white horse, white cloak. We don't see anything that pure white almost in this movie. Even everybody's white porcelain face is like kind of sallow in comparison to that, right? Which is super cool. He takes an axe and he begins beating about the tree with its twisty roots.
Yep.
That was like pretty gross.
Inexpertly. He's not a masculine man.
Yes, yes, that's right. Exactly. He and I are kind of cut from a similar cloth in that way, where it's like maybe some of the traditional trappings of masculinity might escape us, right? There's squelching sounds as he beats these roots and like lots of blood. So again, his face is covered in a splatter.
Again, it's spurting.
Just like torrents of blood. Then he peels back some of the bark, and inside of the tree, squelching gross sounds and a bunch of dead heads in there.
Yeah, I love the way they kind of like push out. I think it's great.
They
very
almost
effective.
Like bulge. Almost like if you got a broken skull and your brain started sticking out, right?
Okay, you know what's interesting?
Mm-hmm.
In certain cases, if you have like really a catastrophic injury to the head and the skull, they will remove pieces of your skull.
To let it breathe, to let it like, let it not be pushed against the skull.
Exactly. Because you do not have the space for your brain to swell.
It wasn't made with any headroom.
Exactly. There's no there's no wasted space in there.
Did you hear what I said, Jenna? Headroom.
I did. You know what's great about being out here, John? You know, we can see the stars above us.
And it's silent.
And it's silent.
What?
It was.
What is that?
Well, you know what? I think it adds to the ambiance.
Suppose you're right. Well, do you know what this is why we do this.
Do you know what they call a group of owls like this? How many do you count? 10?
A minimum of 10. Some are just glowing eyes in the distance, but...
What? Do you know what you call a group of owls?
Parliament.
That's right.
That is cool. As they're looking at these heads as well, the kind of squelching intensifies, and all of a sudden they move to the side as literally a giant black steed with the headless horseman dives out of the tree.
What do you think of this effect of it bursting out of the root system of the tree?
I liked it.
Me too.
They cut quickly, and it's quick, but it's really cool.
And then the actual like gallop out, the jump out of the tree, I think
it's
it looks
amazing
great.
Every
Even
time.
Though it's him like... expanding in size.
Yeah, which could
like
look a little
with a
goofy,
shrink
right?
Ray in reverse. So I actually think it looks great.
Yeah, I really like it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically pounding hooves again, really nice sound again. So basically they kind of watch the horseman ride off, not knowing where he's going. right? He and again, like you were saying earlier, he kind of pays them no mind. They were digging into his tree using axes, and he doesn't like try to kill them or attack them. He just runs.
He's got a job to do.
He's like, hey, I'm
out
here.
Might as well have not been there. No rest for the wicked, he says.
Certainly. So this we kind of see a bit of a painful scene here. There's young Thomas at home with his parents, and he's checking out his really cool kind of nightlight, which I thought, so what it is, you light a candle inside, and it has a dome with a bunch of cutouts, and somehow it spins, probably through steam. It has, like, pictures of witches and black cats that go all over your room. I'm like, they probably wouldn't have given a kid.
No, probably not.
People were a little too superstitious for that, in my opinion, but what do I know? His family seems loving. They're jovial. They're joking around, getting along with each other. All of a sudden, the flames are growing in the fireplace, and the horseman kind of comes right into the house and attacks his father with an axe. Mom hides Thomas underneath the floorboards.
Yeah, this part's
pretty sad, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, cuts dad's head off with an axe, carries it in to then attack the mom. Very slowly coming for mom, and we hear like the clomping of his boots on the floorboards, which also reminds us that Thomas is under the floor. And we don't see mom's head get cut off, but what we do see is a pretty scary scene as we hear the thump, we see the head rolling, and then all of a sudden we just
see her eyes
looking down at Thomas wide open through the slats of the floor.
Yeah, and that's pretty inspired for like the way that scene to go. That was some cool storyboarding that must have happened.
Oh yeah, imagine like drawing it up and stuff. And it kind of harkens, it's harkened back to, I think, later too with another vision of Johnny Depp's mother later on in the movie.
When she's in the Iron Maiden.
She ends up in an Iron Maiden, exactly. And then the horseman picks up that head and he seems ready to leave. And he almost walks out and then he turns around and he comes back and finds Thomas. They don't show any violence against the little boy, but I mean, pretty sad.
But you know, it's like Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, when they're literally under the floorboard, just like in this. There was a search party of young men, including Braun, who were basically ready to go try to find the horseman. And they hear the screams coming from the house. They come running to fight the horseman. Braun, who was kind of Katrina's boyfriend, betrothed,
of some
something
kind,
like that,
yeah.
Doesn't seem to care for him all too much, I suppose. He shoots the horseman right off his horse, but then he rises. And basically what we know is that Braun basically calls this fight on to himself. So if he had ignored him, the horseman would have left him alone. But he's kind of trying to fight him, which is noble.
And Ichabod joins in the fray here.
And again, is kind of inept at the fighting.
Definitely less brawny than Braun.
So they're swinging these pieces of farm equipment.
Sickles.
Some hand sickles. A
couple of sickles.
A big long one. End up running eventually over the covered bridge. The horseman gets the drop on them by walking on the roof of the bridge and jumping down at them.
Which is scary. Again, the sound of his footfalls.
Yes, but you can't see him until, boom, he's right there with them. He basically throws Ichabod out of the way.
Via a shoulder stab.
Which was really cool. And he flies right over his head.
And also like, oh, he's so strong. He took an entire grown man and threw him over his shoulder.
And then we get a cool scene where Braun continues trying to fight on the bridge. And basically the horseman gets him out of position and just cuts him right in half.
In a hilarious, silly, but super fun way.
Yeah, exactly. And like tons of blood falls down. We see it and two pieces of Braun hit the ground. Like the action scenes, not worth spending much time talking about them,
but really fun.
But they're so cool.
Yeah, like they're great.
They're just awesome for a movie that you don't associate with a bunch of cool, well choreographed action sequences. It has them.
It actually really does.
Really interesting stuff. The doctor's looking over Ichabod. He says that wound should have killed him, but it didn't. He didn't lose any blood, hardly. Ichabod has realized that the horseman doesn't kill at random. So basically in his experiences with Braun, he's like, we don't need to fight this guy because he's not trying to kill us.
And it's fruitless anyway.
And he says he's being controlled by somebody with flesh and blood, just like I said. So it's like he's saying there's a human at the heart of it.
Like there is a headless horseman.
Yeah, but it's like, that's not what you meant, though. You meant that there was nothing supernatural happening, and now you're, like, totally on board, so okay. He does have another flashback of his mom, too, and basically Katrina is asking him what's going on. He does mention that he's remembering things he'd long forgotten.
And he also really relates, which is another symptom of trauma, is to have big lapses in your memory.
Exactly. So I thought, that's what I thought, too. He's telling Katrina a bit about his mom. He said, my mother was an innocent. She was a child of nature, and she was murdered by my father, who was basically like a zealot. And he says, I was seven when I lost my faith. Mm. I believe in sense and reason. Mm. And he's explaining his whole deal to Katrina.
And he's makes a, there's a lot of parallels between Katrina and his mom.
Most definitely. There's something very Freudian happening
there
at this moment.
There definitely is.
Yeah, that's a, you know, an association that would probably be painful for someone to make to him.
He's like,
although he seems
really
to really love his mom.
Yeah.
Their romance is certainly burgeoning, we could say. Right? Plus, her boyfriend just died. And he brings that up. And she says, I've already shed my tears for Braun. And is it wicked of me that, you know, I'm okay now?
Nope,
it's not.
Feel how you feel.
Yeah. And he drops a like a classic line. He says, perhaps there is some witch in you. First of all, yeah, there's a lot of witch in her. She's a witch. But he says, perhaps there is some witch in you because you have bewitched me. So he's got some riz. There's no question. Okay, so he comments on the fact that the Lady Van Tassel was the one waiting on him as he was waking up and getting out of his bed and stuff when he was still feeling a little hurt. And she says, well, basically the servant named Sarah apparently ran off. No one knows where she's at, right? He's doing almost like a corkboard thing where he's got all the names on a piece of paper of all the people he suspects might be part of the murder. He's wondering what unites them. Phillips knew about the pregnancy but wouldn't identify the father. He's looking at the Van Garrett family tree and he's trying to put together the clues that he can.
When does he see Lady Van Tassel and the Reverend getting it on?
Yeah, that was an interesting scene, eh?
I remember that being very disturbing to me when I was a kid.
Yes. Like,
it seems so wrong.
There's some sordid sex
very
stuff.
Very sordid, yeah.
Although it's not as graphic as it could be, the sex stuff really stuck with me, too, as a kid. Yeah, it's nasty. And
it's
not
nasty.
Like nasty. I'm talking about like there's some evil to it.
Not
right?
Like Miss Jackson if you nasty.
No, unfortunately not like that. It's like...
I said that to someone recently.
God.
They asked like, what was someone's name?
Miss Jackson. You gotta stop saying stuff when you don't know the person knows it.
No, this was... Yeah, I was like, oh, what's this patient's name again? I was like, oh, so-and-so. Miss Jackson, if you're nasty.
They're like, what? Why are you asking me if I'm nasty at work?
If I'm nasty.
Okay, what they actually do next is they go to see Notary Hardenbrook, and young Masbeth recognizes his father's satchel in the notary's office. And when they go through that, they find... old man Van Garrett's newly created will and testament. They also they find that it was newly created just before he died, and it named the widow Winship as his benefactor and also a marriage certificate. So he married the widow Winship, who was carrying his child.
And that was what we see at the beginning when you see the couple holding hands and the documents being written.
Exactly. So it harkens back to that. The Reverend was the one who married them. Phillips gave them some protection of the law. Dr. Lancaster attended the woman's pregnancy. And this is all stuff that Ichabod's saying.
He's connecting all the dots.
Yes. And the documents as well had been entrusted to the faithful servant, Jonathan Masbeth, who was the witness as well to the documents.
Oh. Duck, John.
Jesus. What?
It's bats. It's bats.
Bats.
Where are they emanating from? I think it's that mausoleum over there. I swear it was open when we arrived, but not that wide. Man, get out of here.
Get out of here. Jeez.
Oh, these bats.
Drive me to drink these bats. Crane is putting all these things together. Basically, he says, Jonathan Masbeth signed as the witness on these documents and basically sealed his fate. It was his death warrant because he got himself involved. Someone stands to gain a fortune, Van Garrett's next of kin, and he says that would be Baltus Van Tassel.
So then he thinks that he must be the culprit at the center of this.
What do you think of Johnny Depp's acting style in this movie? Are you a fan of it?
Yeah, I think it's affected, but it's funny. It suits
it is,
the setting.
But it very much suits this movie.
He's kind of like silly and bumbling yet smart.
Yep. And he is clearly playing almost into like a Sherlock Holmes type thing in a way.
Although like a silly and less effectual one.
100%. I agree. I thought it fit the tone perfectly. It helps to set the tone, mm-hmm. but I thought it very much belonged.
I like it.
It was good. And I think he does a good line in doing an English accent. In terms of the accents you mentioned, some of them get a little all over the place, but I think his is pretty good.
I agree. And I also said to you, I think that the fact that the accents are all over the place is fine because they're not British and they're not modern American, so it's fine for them mm-hmm. to be somewhere in between.
Yeah, good point. And I said that too. I almost lose sight of it and think, yeah, right, he's from London. He's not from London. He's from New York. Mm-hmm. Just happens to be that it's a new country.
Yeah, like right? They were British 30 years ago.
Yeah, so cool. He finds Katrina in his room.
So, bow chicka wow wow.
He finds Katrina in his room, and basically she has seen in his ledger a note that points to Baltus being the guilty.
Yeah, and man, she feels horribly betrayed.
Yeah.
Despite him saying, well, I have a duty to
Got to follow the clues, got to follow the truth, right? And another thing that happens after she leaves in a huff is that Crane is scared to see a spider and makes young Masbeth kind of get it for him. And even he's like, well, what are you so scared of? And he says, no, I simply couldn't. You need to get it for me. And he has to move Crane's bed. And underneath, they find witchy symbols have been drawn there in chalk.
Mm-hmm.
Always love a scene like that. Love when you kind of suddenly realize that that someone in the movie has been victimized by machinations of something magic and evil.
Mm-hmm.
That's always super cool, isn't it?
Again, Hereditary.
Hereditary vibes, 100%. So this is the scene that you were speaking about. The two are in the Van Tassel Manor. They're suspecting Baltus of wrongdoing and being at the center of this conspiracy. They chase someone in a cloak into the woods, and it leaves the Van Tassel Manor, goes right into the woods, and it takes Masbeth and Ichabod a while to find them. But Ichabod basically climbs a hill, and you want to describe for the audience the disgusting, creepy thing that he sees?
Oh, yeah. So he sees the Reverend.
Yep.
Astride the Lady Van Tassel. So they're engaging in, pretty sordid, as you say, sex act.
Just feels wrong.
And
there's no nudity.
It just seems kind of yucky.
Yeah.
And as you say, nasty, but not in the fun way.
No.
And Lady Van Tassel, she also slits her hand open in her palm and rubs it on his back.
For a moment, it looks like she's going to plunge it into his back, but she cuts her own hand wide and just greases his back up with her blood.
Yeah.
And then Johnny Depp basically backs off. He's like, okay, I've seen what I needed to see.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it was, but that creeped me the hell out.
Oh,
when I was a kid.
It's very creepy, yeah.
Everything. Like, it really stuck with me.
You know what I think the reason for that is? Because it did me too. And I think that it's just because sex is kind of a mysterious thing when you're a kid. And so you think, oh, I think it might be a good thing. And so then if you see something,
you add anything in there that's kind of counter to
that.
That
makes you think otherwise, it takes the mystery and makes it creepy and wrong.
Turns it into like a gross thing.
Yeah, instead of wrong exciting, it becomes wrong scary disturbing.
It was. It really did disturb me on some level because it really stuck with me.
Me too.
And I seem to think that this movie had it like through like a stick of rock, like it was all over the place.
Just like twice.
That scene and the scene outside of the home against the wall.
Mm-hmm. And that was pretty minor. But
it was tame, but it was like something gross about it. Something mm-hmm. made my skin crawl, you know? Upon returning to the manor, they see that some of Crane's evidence is gone. And they find that Katrina has burned it at the old stone house in the fireplace.
Yeah.
And she did it to protect her father, she says. And he says, well, your father's the one who stands to profit.
Mm.
Basically that also, I love you. Like, it doesn't change the fact that I love you, but...
Yeah, sorry.
She says, goodbye, Ichabod Crane. I curse the day you came to Sleepy Hollow. Yeah, there's a scene, too, where he's with Mrs. Van Tassel in the manor.
Yes, and because he wants to go see Katrina, she says, Katrina won't come down.
She won't
and
see
then
you.
She calls him out on the fact that he saw her the night before, and she says, don't tell my husband.
She says, you haven't asked about my hand.
Yeah, because she's really favoring it.
Yeah, well, as you would. It was a bad...
Mm-hmm.
It was a big gash. And she says, I know you followed me. Don't tell my husband, who suddenly comes in. And what he says is, Hardenbrook, the notary, apparently hanged himself because he knew he was a dead man. and the town wants to speak out against you, and they're basically all gathering at the church. So apparently the town is for some reason taking arms against Ichabod, which I can't understand, really.
No.
You know, like, I mean, they think he's making it worse.
But it's okay. Maybe. Long for the ride.
Yeah, whatever. Miss Van Tassel says she's going to pick some flowers for her hurt hand because she knows where some grow. Some
arrowroot.
We see a scene where she is doing that, and suddenly the horseman comes up behind her.
And
stalks
Baltus up. Runs away into the church where everyone is meeting.
Yep.
And says that she's been killed.
Yeah, the horseman killed your stepmother, he says to Katrina. Save me, he says to his daughter. So he's kind of maybe little yellow-bellied when the rubber hits the road, would you say?
When the rubber hits the road. I'm just looking up, where is arrowroot native to?
Arrowroot, like the cookie?
Yeah, the hospitals. That's where they're native to.
An arrowroot cookie in a hospital.
This herbaceous perennial is a native of Guyana and Western Brazil.
So not so much.
Nope.
So Jenna did just look it up, and Lady Von Tassel absolutely wouldn't have been able to find native arrowroot.
You weren't picking arrowroot.
They weren't very close to Guyana after all. So unless, I mean, did they move America at one point?
They switched south and north.
Oh, okay. So maybe, yeah. Maybe I just need to learn my history. Everyone is running and hiding in the church. They're ringing the bells. Mm-hmm. The church is chaos. Crowded and overrun by just scared people. But what we see is that the horseman runs up and clearly cannot enter the church grounds. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, Ichabod. Ichabod observes that he can't cross the threshold enter. Of the gate. And Katrina is witnessing her dad just go to pieces.
Yeah.
And it's obviously very distressing
to her.
He's
accusing others. He's saying, there's a conspiracy here. Which is right.
And she kind of puts her hand to her chest in some distress and sits down. Almost looks like she's praying.
Yeah, falls to her knees in the middle of the church.
But she's doing something else.
She's doing something that, you know, wouldn't be looked upon well in a church.
And meanwhile, okay, so Baltus, and who are the conspirators who are left? It's the Reverend and...
Doctor? The doctor. So the Reverend and the doctor, and the doctor kind of tries to come clean.
Yeah, the doctor says, basically, the jig is up.
Yeah, your friends conspired against you. And what is he trying to say? They all knew that this guy was trying to divert his fortune elsewhere.
Yes.
To the lady that he had impregnated and married. And
yes.
They all kept it a secret.
And they're about to tell Baltus when the Reverend then takes the, cross.
Giant cross, yeah.
And smashes it into the doctor's forehead. And the Reverend's a very big man.
He is a big man.
And the doctor is a small man. So it seems like it would be a blow that could be a killing blow.
Seemed it was.
Yeah.
And there's blood involved.
Yeah, on your forehead from caving in with the butt end of a cross.
They might need to open up his skull to allow
it
to expand.
Yeah, alleviate some of that pressure.
But right after that, Mr. Van Tassel shoots the Reverend dead.
Yes, yes. And then obviously, is horrified at what he's done.
And he rises to the top of the staircase.
Of the pulpit.
And he says, there is a conspiracy here, and I will have it out. And boom, what happens?
The horseman has had to get creative.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
He can't cross into this area. And so what he's done is he's taken one of the fence posts, sharpened it, and harpooned it right through the window and right through Dumbledore's chest.
Yes.
And then he uses it like a grappling hook.
Pulls him right out.
And pulls him back.
Oh, so
crazy. And pulls him along through the graveyard. Until just his head is outside
through the fence.
Of the hallowed ground, and then he cuts it off, which is just great.
Man, so awesome.
It's so good. Again, maybe a really fun storyboarding scene. Just great.
And then we see a cool kind of overhead shot, and we see a witch's circle has been drawn on the floor.
This is very disturbing to Ichabod, and he feels very suspicious of Katrina, and almost he assumes he misjudged her and that she's doing something wicked.
Because he sees also that she has a purple hand and purple chalk.
So he knows
she's clearly the one who did it.
Because she faints, seeing the death of her dad.
Another fainting.
When Katrina's back at her home and she's all tucked into bed, she's all safe now. He basically wishes her well and then says, I'm getting out of here.
Leaves before she wakes.
And as he's in the carriage, he's reading that little book that she gave him.
Yes.
Seemingly out of nostalgia, basically, or some kind of sentimentality.
Yep.
He opens it up and he sees that the image that she drew under his bed and on the floor of the church is actually a spell to protect loved ones.
Yes, for protection of loved ones. So it's white magic that she's been doing.
So it makes him feel differently instantly, and he has the carriage driver turn it right around.
How does he know, though? Because one thing he sees as he's about to read the book, he sees them moving the body of Lady Van Tassel because he sees the cut hand flop. He sees the cut hand. Yeah.
He sees the cut hand.
They're moving it to the morgue or whatever. And then he reads the book and he's like, wait, stop. And he's also doing his cardinal in the cage thing. So I think we're meant to be like, okay, the truth isn't always what it appears.
Yeah, things aren't what they seem here.
But I'm just wondering what makes him think, because the next thing he does, just like you said, he goes and checks that body in the morgue or wherever it was meant to be. And he looks at the hand cut and he says, there's no healing on the wound.
It was done post-mortem.
Yeah, it was a post-mortem.
So, but what I think makes him turn the carriage around is knowing that Katrina actually wished him well and is a force for good. Because that makes him want to stay and keep trying.
Yes.
And seeing the hand of the corpse of the supposed Lady Von Tassel and giving him an inkling that maybe things aren't what they seem. I think it's those two things combined.
Okay.
And so he goes back. He takes a closer look at the hand and sees that there was no healing to that cut on that hand, and therefore it's not Lady Van Tassel.
Right.
Because hers had been done several days before she supposedly died.
And he also knows now that Katrina's in great danger.
Oh, speaking of, Rita Skeeter comes in to find the seemingly weak but now up out of bed Katrina and says, hello, stepdaughter.
Yeah, dear stepdaughter.
Dear stepdaughter.
Yeah, it was a little bit Celtic sounding to me. And so, yeah, we get the full, like, Bond villain expose here.
Yeah, she's monologuing.
She says, you look like you've seen a ghost. What do you think about the classic villain monologue? Because it doesn't make much sense, but I freaking love it.
I love it.
I'm like, yes, please button up all the loose ends for me. Tell me why you did it. Tell me how you did it. And tell me what you did. I want to know it all.
Also, it is such a fun opportunity for the villain, the actor, to really chew some scenery
up. Yeah.
And be really super fun.
You know what was a recent great one? Mm. The most recent Scream.
Dermot Mulroney.
Mulroney. He was so fun.
He was hammy.
Yeah.
He was goofy.
I remember coming away thinking that.
Yeah, we loved that.
Yeah.
What's another really good villain monologue?
Ooh, you know what? One I really like is Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the American version.
Oh.
When he's got him
so good.
Strung up and he's got the like, say you were, say you
were.
Right?
See, that is a good movie.
It's a good movie.
But you need to be in a certain mood to watch it. But I'm like, lately I've been feeling like I want to watch that movie.
I love that movie. It's long.
It is very long, but it is good.
And he's basically explaining, he's calm. Like, it was really cool.
Oh, it's so good.
Shout out to Skarsgård, the eldest one.
They're Swedish, by the way. Bill? Oh my God, what is their dad?
Stellan. Okay. Yeah.
He seems like such a sweet guy.
Yeah, shout out to Stellan Skarsgård because he really rocked that role.
I saw an interview with him where I think he was talking about how fun Mamma Mia was.
I bet.
And he just seems so sweet.
So Miss Van Tassel, Lady Van Tassel, basically explains her whole deal. She said, your father saw the horseman come up behind me and he didn't stay around to see if I got killed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So basically the horseman was going to walk by her to kill Mr. Von Tassel.
I love when she's going through the reasons for killing everyone. Yeah. I think that her performance is really good. I love it when she talks about having to kill the midwife's husband just because he was there.
And then just the other day, that silly midwife, Killian, told me the widow had told her a big secret. And she told me this right in front of her husband. What a goose!
Yeah.
And laughs. I actually think she's really funny there and charming.
She's basically like, yeah, like what a silly reason to have to kill somebody, but I had to.
But I had to.
Right? So she stole the horseman's skull from his grave.
And with that, she can control him.
And she knew where it was because she was one of the girls that he ran into in the woods.
She said that she sold her soul to the devil that day.
That day.
To have him avenge her, which I thought was a little bit interesting.
Me too.
And is it like, okay, just because you thought that he was so cool that you wanted him specifically? Because at the time, he was just a human man.
True. She probably thought that he would be looked upon favorably once he got to hell.
And she's like, now that is a badass. Because she did see him obliterate a bunch of soldiers.
And he was infamous. So basically, she was a girl whose family was... they were servants of the Van Garretts, and they lived in the home that Christina Ricci eventually lived in. And what happened was her father died, and therefore they couldn't do too much to help out at that house. They got evicted, and it wasn't long before they were living homeless in the woods, and their mother taught them a whole bunch of things, witchy things, but then died herself. So then these two daughters lived in the woods.
Yep.
And basically she struck up this whole plot in order to get revenge on the Van Garretts, to get revenge on the Van Tassels for taking her home, because they ended up being given that home by the Van Garretts and living there. Also, I think she wants the money.
I think she says to secure her legacy. I think
she did speak about, but it's like, then why did she fake her own death?
I don't know.
Are you going to cash that check? And it's one of those things.
I guess she was always going to come back and say, no, I never died.
Hey, I didn't die.
Well, but then why'd they do the hand thing?
Look at me, not dead.
Maybe I'm missing something.
And who's the hand thing going to fool? Who knew she cut her hand? Her husband and Ichabod?
Yeah, her husband who's already dead.
Maybe she thought Ichabod would investigate the body.
Also Katrina.
She knew he might.
Katrina knew it too.
So, but it's just one of those funny things. She had to kill so many people to be the benefactor of this money, right? Like, so many people had to die. Plus she had to kill all the people who knew about the fact that actually the money should go to whatever family this widow had. But basically, it's really interesting, right? Because you got this big supernatural story, all this vibey stuff, witches, the horsemen, and at the root of it, as always, there's money. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, follow the money, and that's exactly what Ichabod was doing. Insurance scam, that's hilarious.
Young Masbeth is there thinking he's unnoticed, but basically she's a witch, so she knows he's there.
She knew he was there, and she kind of like quickly looks at him, and she's like, and you're a master.
And scares them both out of the windmill that they're in.
Yep.
And I love this line where she says, the horseman comes, and tonight he comes for you. I think she delivers it really well.
She's happy. She's like a maniac.
I don't know. It just seems like one of those great theater. She seems like a real thespian. I love
she would love to chew it up. Eh?
I love the way she delivers it.
Yeah. And Ichabod's rushing towards them. He meets them at the windmill. They run upward as the horseman is trying to come in. He's gotten to them. They lock the door, but they run up. As Steve would tell us, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You don't want to run upward to the top story of anything.
They run up to the top story of the windmill, and then Ichabod drops a lamp down to start a fire.
Sets it on fire.
Where the horseman is pursuing them. Yeah, so he drops the lamp, he catches the windmill on fire, but cleverly has them jump on the sails of the windmill.
To ride it down.
Yeah, which will then carry Masbeth, Katrina, and himself down to where they can safely jump and run away.
And they just make it out of the range of the blast radius of the windmill that explodes, which I didn't understand.
Just probably shouldn't think about too deeply. And then out walks from the stone base of
the
windmill, out walks the horseman unscathed.
And Johnny Depp says, you know, because Masbeth is like, do you think it killed it? And he says, that's the problem. It was already dead. And out it comes. And we get a really cool chase scene.
Yeah.
Through the woods, on and off of a carriage. Just really cool.
Yeah, and as we were watching it, John was commenting, like, this is a pretty good action scene and extended, like, and it was great. Lots of peril for all of them.
For sure.
And basically a car chase, but with a carriage and a horse.
Yeah, exactly. And at one point, the horses get detached from the carriage. Mm-hmm. The carriage flips over, lands right on the horseman. And at that point, I did say, like, who cares? Because we just watched him walk out of a blazing inferno, right? There's no stakes for the horseman.
Exactly. Right? It's like a slugfest between two, like, superheroes.
It would be like the Hulk or something getting beat up.
So, yeah, you watch it, but it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, but it was cool. The action shots looked really great. Well done. All of the effects, in my opinion, hold up.
Oh, no, I agree. I was going to ask you how you felt about the effects.
Only thing I thought was a little ropey was the witch face reveal with the possession.
Yeah.
But
I didn't mind that too much because it was
kind of done on purpose. And it wasn't like this is going to be photorealistic. It was meant to look a little goofy, I think.
And so they wind up in the clearing with the big gnarled tree where...
And the Lady Van Tassel catches up to them.
And because she has the Hessian's skull in a bag, that's her like talisman that she can use to control him.
Yeah, it's like the switchboard to tell him what to do, essentially, right?
And so they're all in this kind of clearing for the final showdown, basically. Yep. And what Lady Van Tassel has done is basically she sicked him on Katrina. So we're just waiting for him to cut off Katrina's head.
And so he goes to do so,
pulls back her beautiful head of hair to reveal her lovely, elegant swan neck.
Yep.
And he's about to cut her head off when Ichabod has realized what the key is. And he gets the skull off of Lady Van Tassel. Mm-hmm. and basically says, heads up to the Hessian, and throws him his own head back.
And he just catches it, which gratefully.
He palms it.
Yeah.
And then puts it back on his own head. Yeah. And what do you think of these effects where we see kind of like the flesh coming back on
reanimating
the
head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it looked great.
I thought it was really good too. There were a couple times where the skull looked maybe a little too big for the body, but it looked really good. It was like the flesh was like reclaiming the skull.
Yeah.
And it looked really painful for the Hessian as well. There was a point where we get again the bulging eyes, which is again cartoonish, almost like a wolf with like their tongue rolling out or something like that. I really liked it though. I thought it looked great.
I thought that it was a cool way to imagine that he would come back to himself.
Right.
That it would start with, you know, like muscles and tendons and up to skin. I think that that's a cool way to conceive of that. Yeah. And I think it looked pretty good, even though it's a long, unflinching shot of it happening. Yeah. And I still think it looks pretty good.
Me too.
And then we wind up with scary, spooky...
teeth filed down Christopher Walken.
Sharp teeth Christopher Walken. Still not a word to be said. And eventually what he does do, he gets back on his horse. As you would imagine, he loves his horse. He gives him a little greeting. And then... And they're afraid of him. They're trying to give him a wide berth. And he rides to the unconscious form of Lady Van Tassel, scoops her up onto his horse, and is obviously like taking her as his bride, basically.
And before then, he gives her a big kiss and kind of biting kiss and makes her bleed all over the place.
Yeah, it was creepy. And that was vivid to me too, like the sex scene as something I remembered, because he gives her a kiss, but
with those teeth,
there's blood. Yeah, so it's like, I guess he's also biting her lips. As much as she was into him because she wanted him to do her bidding, she's terrified
scared to be
right
beside
now.
Him too. Yeah.
And he takes her back into his lair, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought that this was super great, super effective. And then her hand is sticking out of the roots.
The tree. Yeah.
Thought it looked great.
So
and it's
cool.
A terrifying idea that you'd be trapped inside a tree like that.
Yeah. I know. It was a really cool climax to the whole movie.
I like the way that the creative team, I guess, imagined the different fantastical elements.
Like the tree opening up and...
Yeah, the tree opening up.
Yeah.
Her being trapped within its roots as her ultimate fate.
Right.
And like I said, the way that his head reanimates. I like all the ways that they make those fantastical things happen.
It all works.
Yeah, I think that it's all portrayed in really creative, cool, and effective ways.
Me too. I agree.
Not a lot of mental health takeaways with this movie.
We did talk about, the flashbacks were a cool element. And, you know, someone who did have a traumatic history, that could very well be one of their symptoms. This one's just fun.
Oh, it's so fun. And just like we're recording at St. Lucius's right now and that we recorded at the Spookingtons, you know, the other day, this movie was just to bring about the vibe, the feeling vibe of Halloween. And of the 100%. Month of October, a spooky season.
We should probably watch it every year. It would be a grand tradition, wouldn't
it? You know what? When your daughter's not far off from watching it.
Oh, man. I don't know about the sex stuff.
But your daughter's a bit cowardly, though.
She really wanted to watch Wednesday. Her friends watched Wednesday.
Yeah.
She wanted to watch it. Maybe there's a bit of a thrill there. I hope so.
Your oldest daughter, who would be around the age that she could watch, is a bit of a fraidy cat.
Yeah, she doesn't relish being scared all the time.
No shade on your daughter. Whereas younger daughter was the older one, I'd be like, hell yeah.
Well, she'd be like, watch out for her, ghosts or goblins.
Exactly.
She's not going to take anything laying down.
Yeah.
So any final takeaways on this movie? I mean, clearly we like it.
Love it. Yeah, like you say, go back to it all the time.
Yeah.
It's super like comforting, fun. It's just like it achieves what it set out to do. It is a spooky Halloween movie that really embraces the season and lets you feel all those fun things.
Very cool.
Yeah, I love it.
And I couldn't agree more. I just think the vibes are what this movie is all about first and foremost. Mm-hmm. But there's a very cool story. There's a mystery to be solved. There's a great villain. There are some really great effects that still hold up.
Great performances all around.
There's some great fights as well.
Yeah,
what did you, because I did want to ask you, what did you think about the choice to cast Christopher Walken?
Seems maybe a bit out of left field.
So he's as the horseman when he's a human.
Yep.
And not one line of dialogue.
No, I think a bit out of left field because it probably could have been anyone and not even necessarily a named actor.
Could have been someone who, you know, it had less recognition factor, right?
Yeah, it's not like it's like, oh, it has to be a big name. It's carrying the movie.
Not
it's
at
the
all.
Headless Horseman. It could have been anyone.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, like it spends 99% of the movie
without
no
a
head.
But I also think, does he look creepy? Absolutely.
Oh, he sure did.
Does he act creepy? Absolutely.
He pulled it off. Yeah, no question.
Yep.
It's not like, oh, well, he didn't really go for
it.
He went for it.
Probably the first movie I ever saw Christopher Walken in.
I imagine you're right.
So for me, it was probably like the defining Christopher Walken role.
Yeah, so I'm not familiar as much with his works. I kind of know him most from Wedding Crashers, if I'm honest. When not one of his defining works, and I do know that.
Pulp Fiction, The Deer Hunter.
Okay.
I'm trying to look up some old ones because he's been acting forever. Annie Hall. Anyway. Lots of movies.
Anyway, I did think it was interesting to cast him just because everybody knows who Christopher Walken is, because he's one of those actors who's kind of become his own thing in the same way that Bob Dylan had to Bob Dylan everything up. Chris Walken has to kind of do the same. I'm here for your head. How am I going to do it? It's like I'm thinking of there's a quote that's like, you're talking to my guy all wrong. It's the wrong tone.
It's the wrong tone. It's the wrong tone. Yeah. He's got such an affected way of speaking. And then after this, I probably knew him most for Hairspray.
Oh, he's the father
and
in Hairspray.
Yeah, and he tells John Travolta, he's like, babe, you spry as a slinky. Oh, I love that movie. Oh, man. You know I love that movie.
I know you love that crazy. Movie. Such a good movie. You know what, Jenna? The fog is really roiling in.
We should get out of here.
I think I'm hearing more noises than I expected. It's going to be messing with our levels. I'm thinking, Jeeves, what would you think about kind of
wrapping us up?
You know, getting out of here. I see that you're still helping with it, yeah. to put the dirt back in that grave, but maybe you could sign off for us with our audience here.
Let's make like a banana and split.
Exactly. There's something cool like that.
Sign us off, Jeeves.
Sign us off, Jeeves. Listeners, we will catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. Bye.
As always, please rate, review, and subscribe.